I'm Bruce Van Dyke.
I'm Craig Adams.
Joining us on the line is the Browns reporter for the Chronicle-Telegram, Scott Pedrek. Good morning, Scott.
Hey, how are you guys?
Oh, okay. Let's see. We talked to you last when RG3 became a new member of the Browns, but a whole lot of other things have happened since then, including the Browns trading out of the number 2 pick. When was the last time that the Browns actually did that prior to the draft? A lot of that sometimes is happening on draft day. Has there been a in the past where you've planned what's going to go with number 2, and then all of a sudden you got to switch your gears as a reporter covering this when they get closer to it?
Yeah, you know, not that I can think of, at least not since they've been back. They've had a lot of high picks, obviously, and they've traded out. You know, they traded the 5th pick 1 year, and they moved back to get Phil Taylor, and they traded down to get Alex, you know, and wound up getting Alex Mack. And then they had the 4th pick a couple of years ago and traded back to 8 to get Justin Gilbert. But all of those trades happened while they were on the clock, you know, on draft night, not ahead of time. So, you know, it was a weird draft, and the only reason they could trade this pick is because the Rams traded up from 15 to number 1 the week before with Tennessee. So then that kind of put the Browns on the clock, and they could go ahead and make the trade official.
So now that we are at number 8 in the draft, what are you looking for this coming Thursday?
Well, that's the thing. You know, when they were at number 2, you could focus on quarterback because that seemed to be the logical pick. You know, they need a franchise quarterback. They could have gotten one at number 2. But now that they're out of there, it opens up so many things. First of all, a trade down is still possible, another trade down. They could move back to 13 because there's thought that Miami wants to get in the top 10. They could trade back to 15 because Tennessee, who had the number 1 pick, is now at number 15, but reportedly wants to move back into the top 10. That's what their general manager has said. But if they stay at 8, then, you know, obviously you don't know who's going to go in the first 7. You know, both top quarterbacks are going to be gone. But they could take a cornerback, Vernon Hargraves from Florida. It's a possibility. They could take a pass rusher because they need somebody who can go get the quarterback. They could take a receiver, although that seems a little high for the top receivers in this draft. It's not a great receiver class. Receiver seems more in play if they move down to 13 or 15. They could take an offensive lineman. I'm not sure they would do that after having taken an offensive lineman in the first round last year, but they lost Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz in free agency. Joe Thomas could be traded, so they have needs on the offensive line. And then quarterback, you can't rule it out. I know, you know, Hugh Jackson, the coach, said everybody's assuming that Jared Goff and Carson Wentz are the top 2 quarterbacks, but he goes, that's an assumption. So maybe the Browns have, let's say, Paxton Lynch, the kid from Memphis, rated higher than those 2 guys. They think they can get him at number 8, and they still got all those extra picks from the trade with the Eagles. So I think those are the most likely possibilities.
Scott, if they hold steady at 8, is there someone you would like to see them take that would be a good fit, an impact, you know, player?
To me, it's more about position. I think you can only address certain positions in the top 10. Like, for instance, I think running back. I think the top 10 is too high for a running back. Now, they could still take Ezekiel Elliott out of Ohio State. I've heard a lot of people mention that as a possibility, and Hugh Jackson wants to run the ball. He might be the best, quote-unquote, overall player in the draft. I just feel that unless the guy turns out to be Adrian Peterson, a kind of once-in-a-generation player, it's not worth taking a running back that high. You can kind of get similar value later in the draft. So I would not take him. You know, I think that's too early to take an offensive guard. I don't think I'd spend that high a pick on an offensive lineman this year because they took Joel Bitonio in the second round a couple years ago, Cam Irving in the first round last year. So I would focus on pass rusher or cornerback, and then if you move back, I would have to throw a receiver into that mix because they really need playmakers. I'm just not sure a receiver in this draft is worth the number 8 pick.
Scott, the Browns recently wrapped up a veterans mini camp, kind of situation, and I guess you had a chance to see some of the folks there. There was talk that Barkevious Mingo was bulked up. Paul Kruger had shorn locks. What did you take away from that?
Those are all true. We got to watch a couple full practices. So, Barkevious Mingo is much bigger throughout the chest and the biceps. Who knows if that will have any impact once we get to games. You know, he's always been a heck of an athlete. He can run with anybody, but has struggled to rush the quarterback. He's struggled to make tackles. You would think adding strength would help, help him set an edge against the run, force the running back inside. But we're still months from seeing if that actually comes to fruition. You know, I thought you could get a good view of how Hugh Jackson wants to coach his team, what kind of personality he has. And when you talk to all his players, they talk about the enthusiasm and the energy he brings. And that was obvious in these practices that we got to watch. He would make them re-huddle if, you know, if they were slow getting out of the huddle or if they called a play run. He was adamant about getting it right. He talked about tempo a lot from the first practice rep. Tempo, tempo, tempo. He wanted it faster, faster, faster. And then his coaching staff was like that. He's got Al Saunders. He's a receivers coach, special assistant. And I think Al's 68, I think. You mean he's in that range? And he would sprint 50 yards downfield to congratulate Terrell Pryor on a good route or to tell Taylor Gabriel that he had, you know, he needed to do something differently. And I just think that kind of energy is contagious. Not that Mike Pett's staff didn't have it, but there was a difference watching these guys coach, and you just have to hope that that carries over and that winds up being a building block and a difference with Hugh Jackson.
You mentioned Terrell Pryor. Do you see any role for him on this team?
You know what? He's going to be, you know, everybody thinks the Browns are going to be bad this year, or real bad this year. And obviously it's too early to say. We don't know what kind of play they're going to get from quarterback. You know, if RG3 turns into his rookie of the year form, then I think you can win more games than everybody's giving him credit for. But having said that, Terrell Pryor's a guy I think you can be excited about either way, just to see if he's able to make that conversion from quarterback to receiver. I was really skeptical last year, and part of that was because the limited time frame. He was signed in June after all the mini camps. He showed up in July for training camp, the end of July. So you give a guy 6 weeks and say, okay, become a receiver, that's asking way too much. Now he's got an entire offseason. He's got an entire offseason program with the team, and he still has all the physical tools. He's 6'4". Let's say he's 230-ish. He runs really well, like 4'4 well. So I think there's a chance that Hugh Jackson and his staff is able to get something from Terrell Pryor. And I know it's only a rookie minicamp and there's no pads, but he made some plays in the couple of practices that we watched. So I think there is some reason to be excited about maybe they found a diamond in the rough because he's still pretty young and he has all the physical tools to be an elite receiver. And that doesn't say he'll become an elite receiver, but he has the physical tools.
Does he have the attitude? Does he seem like that? Because obviously having been there, been cut, been shifted around, his career probably not going the way he imagined. What's his attitude like that? Do you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. He's got a little bit of a different personality. But I haven't had anybody tell me that he doesn't work hard. And I know he's smart. You know, if you play quarterback in this league, which you did for a couple years, you're a smart guy. You know offenses. You know where you should, you know, what kind of routes you should run, how you should run them, where you should be on these different plays. So I do think he has the mentality to play the position. And he's kind of he's bought into the transition, and he's willing to work hard. And I saw that last year, and I continue to see it. So I dismissed it last year, but now I think there's real reason to think that he might be able to pull it off.
We're talking this morning to Scott Petrek of the Chronicle-Telegram, covers the Browns. Draft is coming up. You've had a chance to talk with some more people in the front office. Some of these names were getting to use, getting known. Andrew Berry, you just recently talked with. What's your thoughts about him and how he's relating to the other folks in the front office sort of behind-the-scenes things?
Sure. He didn't want to open up a whole lot about specific plans and even some of his history as a scout, but who he discovered or who he might have missed on. But you can tell that he's a smart guy, and that's the lasting impression with all these guys. You have Sashi Brown, the executive vice president of football operations. You have Paul DePodesta, the chief strategy officer. You have Andrew Berry, the vice president of player personnel. All three are Harvard guys. All three are pretty young. Andrew Berry just turned 29 recently. They hired him when he was 28. But these guys have never been in these roles before. So while I think they're all qualified, they're capable to do a good job in their roles, we've never seen them do it. which is why I'm so intrigued to see how this draft comes together, because they want to be collaborative. They want to take input from Hugh Jackson, who's been in this role before, been in football forever, will probably have a bigger impact early than he will, let's say, 3-4 years down the road. But how do they come together? They all came together to make this trade from 2 to 8, and that's a big deal. Now let's see how it happens on draft day. Do they quibble about trading down versus taking a player? You know, can they all agree on which player to take at 8 or 32, or can they all agree to trade the 32 pick? So I think it's fascinating, but the guys have handled themselves well, and they certainly come across as intelligent and prepared.
Well, prepared is what you need when you're under the clock and the pressure's on that Thursday and the world is looking at you. It's a little bit different than when you're just sort of planning it out in a meeting outside of there, so that's for sure.
No, that's exactly right, and I think we saw some of that when Joe Banner was in charge. Now, he had been involved in the draft and in football decisions in Philly, but never was the main guy. He came here, was the decision maker, and I think on draft day, sometimes they got to him, and, you know, the pressure of, I need to make a pick right now, or my guy just got taken, I don't think he always handled that well.
Well, we shall see what happens. We got a week off from Cavaliers. They swept, so we can now focus on the Browns. And we got through the whole discussion this morning without even mentioning Johnny Manziel, and we'll leave it at that, Scott. How's about that?
Fair enough. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot. Scott Petrak with the Chronicle-Telegram joining us this morning. You can follow him on Twitter @ScottPetrak.